You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where we're always joshing around. I'm your host, Justin Amosneski, the hopeful bromantic, and that opening quip is a reference to something I saw on Twitter where in the middle of the country, I think it was, I'm not even sure, they had something called a Josh fight where it looked like a bunch of people named Josh went to a field and hit each other with pool noodles. I don't know what it's about. That's all I know about it. It seems bizarre to me. I don't know if it's a sign of the times. I will leave that all for you to consider, because we have a few other things that are, to me, much more interesting to consider this week. But first, I have to bring in my co-host. Joining me this trip from Dale's Lawn, identifying as a woman to forgo his white male gay privilege, William Green.
Hello, hello. Yeah, it's another beautiful weekend. A bit overcast, but, you know, I love the change in weather. The springtime is about the only time we get any change in weather here in California. So as summer is slowly starting to creep in, we're getting some cloudy days and nice breeze. I did some yard work this weekend because of all the dampness. I had to weed whack outside, and my puppy is super confused by the change in landscape. It's very confusing that the little patches of weeds are gone. Everything is suspicious out there now. He has to smell everything, so. It's been pretty entertaining. And speaking of entertaining, you see that fight yesterday, the UFC fight yesterday?
No, I have been hosting my parents all week, so I was unable to watch any.
No, you're having hosting your own UFC fight.
You said it.
Well, it was great. Spoiler, I guess, warning. There are some broken bones in this one.
There's walkers in the barn and Lori's pregnant.
So be careful if you're watching clips, if you're easily grossed out. Nothing bloody or anything, but it was some really good wrestling, actually. So you might want to catch up on the highlights when you get a chance. Just watch out for those.
Man, I still haven't watched the Polish guy from the last time, man. Oh, I'm so far behind.
You are so far behind. For someone who follows the WWE storyline so tightly, I think you would enjoy some of these Polish storylines in the UFC.
To be clear, I do more time reading about what happened in the pro wrestling than I do actually watching pro wrestling. So I'll just pull up an article and be like, what happened in the matches, and read that and move on. So I'm not actually really actively watching pro wrestling. I did hear that the fights were in Florida, though.
They were in Florida. I think in Jacksonville, in the crowd, one of the Paul brothers was booed, and then Machine Gun Kelly was there and was cheered, and a lot of people there, most mixed mask crowd, some masked, some not masked. So Joe Rogan and the other announcers got to touch each other. They made a big deal about that, and they weren't, of course, wearing masks. So and the crowd, I think, changes the dynamic a ton, even in UFC, right?
Yes.
You can just really tell the fighters, definitely see it more of a performance in the sense of, you know, feeding off of the crowd energy. So it was a lot of fun. It was good to see something somewhat resembling normalcy. Of course, right, I was watching it at home and not, you know, in a crowd of people, which I normally would go to this little neighborhood dive bar where they play the UFC games, and it's or UFC matches, and it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, well, it's definitely more fun to watch in a crowd. And, you know, what you're saying is, I think, the advantage of Florida sort of being on the cusp of all that. And when you say that,
oh, dude, they booed the Chinese, like I forgot the name of the lady who's like the champ of the whatever weight division in the women's, you know, I guess the announcers were like talking to her like, oh, she's so loved. And then she comes on, she just gets fucking booed by the by the Florida crowd. And Joe Rogan's like,
yeah, that's
well,
a bit much.
What can you do? It's Florida.
Well, she was
versus USA person, so I don't know.
Right. But is she like, does she live in China still, or was she just born there and came here?
No, I think she lives in China. She might train somewhere else, of course, right? Like a lot
right.
of them train
so,
somewhere else. But yeah, I think
that is arguably grounds to boo someone, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
When you have the means and you're still continuing to live in a place that's corrupt, that is means to boo someone. Is the crowd that nuanced? I don't know. But I do appreciate what you're saying, a mixed mask crowd. To me, that's the way it should be. That's the way it should be. It should not be required. And if people want to wear masks, go ahead. And if others don't, go ahead. That's the way it should be. And I'm getting really sick of William masks outside. It's really tough to go outside and see people wearing masks. It just, there's no science for masks outside, yet it's still happening.
Yeah, so you're saying you wouldn't enjoy my kickball game later this afternoon where everyone's wearing masks while playing kickball.
No, I would get really, really angry.
Yeah.
Really angry. It's so it's like concrete physical visual irrationality. That's the way it is. Like there's an outdoor mall we went to yesterday here, the Outlets, and it says masks required. I only wore masks when going into the stores that we went into. When I was actually walking around outdoors, I didn't have my mask on. And you know what? Nobody said a word to me, and most other people didn't have their masks on.
What a rebel.
Yeah, I'm a rebel for going with reality.
Who knew that not wearing a mask would be punk?
Yeah, right? Jesus. All right, let's talk about some other stuff that we didn't ever anticipate, or some maybe we did. Hit the music. Take a good look around. This life really sucks. As always, if you'd like to support the show, it's greatly supportive. It's greatly appreciated. You can do so through Patreon or Locals. Patreon is per month. Patreon is per episode. Locals is per month. You can do so at themidside.com/Patreon or themidside.com/locals. William, before we get into more Florida talk, more of that Florida talk that everyone loves.
Hot Florida talk, yeah.
It's a really good thing I moved to Florida because I don't know what this show would be without me moving to Florida at this point.
Like, well, it just works perfectly. It would just be ACS complaining about California constantly.
Probably. But I mean, I would like to think... Right before we go into our first topic, I would just like to think moving to Florida and having reality happen in this way would convince listeners
to move
show midsiders that maybe I know what I'm talking about. Right? How many things on this show have I said that have come to pass?
Well, I would say most of them. But...
Right. So I think Florida is just another example of that. And we'll get into that in a second. But first, one of the things I want to talk about is something I think maybe you'll be on my side about, because I think you're more towards the straight edge side of punk than the debaucherous side of punk. And it's something that reared its ugly head in the middle of the week this week, because it's April, which is the fourth month of the year, which means on the 20th day of the fourth month, we have people celebrating marijuana usage. And William, to me, 420 is not a holiday, and it's not something that you can try and make into a holiday, and it actually really, 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 really rubs me the wrong way. And I tweeted that, and I had somebody come at me and be like, oh, this is the way why we do it. We're combating systemic racism and the images of marijuana users, and they tried to like back me into a corner and be like, well, what are the stereotypes of marijuana users? And to me, there are specific stereotype and subgroups, but I think, and I want to know your opinion on this, William, I think marijuana usage is pretty mainstream and it's pretty accepted. I mean, yesterday, I forget where we were. We were at a store. Oh yeah, it was at the Adidas outlet, right? We're at the Adidas outlet, and I looked down at the fingernails of our cashier and she had marijuana leaves painted on her nails. That is what I mean when I say marijuana is mainstream.
It's no longer the devil's leaf, right? It's no longer the devil's leaf. So I guess I so if I had to stretch, if you put backed me into a corner, Justin, and you said find a way to celebrate 420 rationally, it would have to be something about the, not about the oppression of the marijuana smokers necessarily, but about body autonomy, right? Like that would be the only sort of semi-rational thing I could pick out of that. Meaning like, hey, I get to do what I want with my own body and not be called a criminal or put in jail forever for it, right? I mean, that's the only thing I could come up with.
Well, and I get that, and that's why...
The equivalent would be, we don't celebrate, like, Prohibition Day.
Right.
Like, or whatever.
Which would make more sense.
The end of Prohibition. What's the end of Prohibition? Prohibition? What's the opposite? You know what I'm saying. The day that Prohibition was repealed. We don't celebrate that day.
Right. But I would like that. Like, I would appreciate people being like, oh, you know, this is the day government got out of our lives. Right? I would get that. I would get that. But... That's the thing. Like, that's why, William, even though I'm straight edge and I think don't use drugs, right? Think about what you're putting in your body, right? Be responsible about it. And again, disclaimer for anyone listening for the first time, I understand medicinal usage of drugs. Okay. I'm not saying that, but I'm saying like recreational usage of marijuana does not make sense to me. And it, especially to take it to the added stance of celebrating it in this way, does not make sense to me. Because again, I am for all legalization of drugs because you have a right to put in what you want in your body. But I think it's weird to define your personality around or celebrate something you put in your body. Like, do you ever see me, William, when there's any of the inevitable like 80 cheeseburger or burgers or double cheeseburger days throughout the year? Do you see me talking about them? Do you see me talking about pizza day? And now the added thing people are going to add in, well, 420 is about the police code and that's about, you know, making it legal and rebelling against the system. But that's something I also have a hard time with. And, you know, I don't usually go at libertarians on the show, right? We're pretty sympathetic towards them. But I actually unfollowed a number of libertarian accounts on Twitter this past week because they celebrate marijuana usage. And I don't understand why.
Yeah, the key there is the usage and not the freedom. Because
right.
Because if I had to lay any sort of political success at the libertarian movement, it would be marijuana legalization. I mean, it was in the first issue of Reason magazine. It was, you know, it's been a topic that they've been talking about for years. So I would give them some sort of contributing partial credit to that movement.
Right,
the decriminalization
certainly.
Of drugs is something that's been an issue on their mind. So again,
and
if
that's
the celebration was there, not the usage, right, but the freedom,
right,
then I'd be all behind it.
Right, because to me, and this is where I don't know if I'm irrational, to me it cheapens the celebration of the freedom if what you're celebrating is the usage, because then it makes it seem like the only reason you wanted it to be free is not body autonomy, as you said, but wanting to just do the drug. So it seems like it's more of a pragmatic stance than a principled stance. And that's what bothers me about it.
Yeah, I think that makes sense.
I just don't get why among the libertarian crowd, and this is why Ayn Rand famously called them hippies of the right, correct? It seems to be more about wanting to do the drugs than saying people can do whatever they want. Like, why would it just be 420 day? Why wouldn't there be a day about legalizing all drugs? We never even see that because it's not about that. It's about wanting to do the drugs itself and wanting to, and this is where the 420 day really bothers me, wanting to be accepted for it.
Yeah.
It seems very second-handed to me. And I think ultimately that's what really bothers me about it. I really, look, most people who smoke weed are not annoying, right?
No, if you're around them when they're, it's not part of their identity, right?
Right, most people, yes.
Yeah, it's just right. A thing, just like the fact that, you know, I drink, I like good cocktails. That's not part of my identity, right? Like, it's not, I don't identify as a fancy Boulevardier / Manhattan man, right?
Right. Well, and let me put this even more of a concrete point on it and less controversial. We were in the Coke store in Disney Springs yesterday, And there's like all sorts of paraphernalia that has Coca-Cola logos on it. And my dad says, well, you must really have to like Coca-Cola to buy these things. And it's the same thing. I don't wear Coca-Cola stuff. I don't define myself by that. No, I don't drink a lot of soda, but there's nothing I eat or drink that I define myself by. Right?
I'm not, translate that for the proper English speakers. It's called pop.
Okay. Yes. Sorry. But the point is, whatever it is, right? If you have a favorite restaurant chain, right? You don't have all of your stuff. You know, maybe you could have one or two things. Right, but
it's not necessarily about the number of things. It's just like, there's this sort of joining the tribe aspect, right? And then developing all the behaviors that come with it. It's a very human thing to do, right? To acclimate to a group, but seems so weird to have that be the group that you're acclimating to.
Well, right. It's wanting to belong is a very human thing. And I think it's very strong nowadays because we have a lot of people who don't feel like they belong anywhere, because the irony of tribalism is it makes fewer groups that people can rationally belong to, right? Just look at Justice League, how that's a rational group of people coming together, right? Around shared values. So when you do these surface level things, you feel less inclined, you feel less involved, you feel less included. So you do these more ostentatious things because you really want to find the other people who agree with you, and you really want people to know who you are. And then you want to be accepted by the general culture. And that's why people treating 420 as a holiday really, really, really ultimately bothers me, because it's like saying, here's this thing that's harmful most of the time that I want everyone to accept me for doing.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I think my final thought on this topic is, I think it's more of a missed opportunity, right? This gets back to, the recommendations that we make to our libertarian friends, right? Argue on moral principles, right? Always go back to that. And the whole, you know, body autonomy argument is something to celebrate. That's worth celebrating. You know, smoking pot, that can be a symbol of that on 420. I mean, there's a way you could incorporate that and have it make sense. And it's a missed opportunity. They miss it. You know, they missed it this year. Maybe next year.
Yeah, and I think your missed opportunity point is great. And I don't want to just apply it to libertarians. I want to apply it to everyone, objectivists, libertarians, right, left. Stop arguing and presenting yourself from political tribal lines and start presenting yourself from, here are my values, I would like to share them with you and help you live a life that I believe is moral in the way I live it. Rather than attacking people and saying, you don't belong to this group, you're a terrible person, share how people can be better people. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know who doesn't miss an opportunity, though, William? DeSantis. And DeSantis, this week, with everything that was going on, did something I think is pretty awesome in Florida, and I want to see what you think about it, right? He passed what is being called an anti-riot bill. So I, William, rather than read the news coverage when it happened, I went and I read some of the text. I read some of the text of the bill before I started reading people's responses to it, and there's some stuff that stood out to me. So one thing that stood out to me is there's literally a sentence in there that says the following. This section does not prohibit constitutionally protected activity such as peaceful protest. And I want to start there. I want to start there because we can go into all the nitty gritty of all the, you know, these screenshots I have of the bill itself. But to me, William, that there is a law in a state that is distinguishing between rioting and peaceful protesting, I think that is super important. And I think that speaks to an example of everything DeSantis has done to protect freedom over the last year in this state.
Yeah, it's crazy. If you search through any of the news articles, you won't find the text of the bill. Like, I just hit all the news, the major news sites. None of them link to the text of the bill. Isn't that interesting? It's all the hot takes on it.
To me, William, they're doing that because they want to be able to riot, and they want to obscure what the definition of riot is.
Well, we know it's peaceful. Well, we know peaceful even there is going to be twisted, right? Peaceful, words equals violence. So, if someone says something you don't like, that's no longer a peaceful protest. If you say something deemed racist, homophobic, xenophobic, genderphobic, transphobic, whatever, then you are committing violence in their eyes. So it's no longer a peaceful protest. So you don't have a right to protest anymore. So they can do whatever they want. I mean, that's the danger I see is even with this definition, you're going to have someone say, well, I drove through this Tea Party protest because they were talking about, black crime statistics, and those are racist.
Right, I agree, but that's the great thing about this Florida bill is what you're saying, William, is they're defining their actions in a second-handed manner. So they're saying, well, it's okay to murder someone if they offended me. If someone commits violence against me, it's okay to murder someone. Now, in this case, we have laws, right? We have in Florida the Stand Your Ground law, or we have the self-defense. You can kill someone if it's self-defense. But rioting is disproportionate from that sort of violence, the violence you're describing. And the nice thing about this bill is it defines rioting. A person commits a riot if he or she willfully... Well, now they're going to say the law is transphobic, right? He or she willfully participates in a violent public disturbance involving an assembly of three or more persons acting with a common intent to assist each other in violent and disorderly contact resulting in injury to another person, damage to property, or imminent danger of injury to another person or damage to property. I think that's a pretty good definition, William, and I think it's pretty clear what it's trying to prevent. This is trying to disincentivize people from doing these things. They don't want people gathering with the intent to injure people or damage property. I think that's a pretty fair, and I think that's a pretty objective and moral use of government, right? One of the uses of government is to protect people. And I think this is a pretty fair and moral use of government here.
Yeah, I think it would depend on how imminent is defined. I mean, I'm always skeptical when we're talking about limits, right? Limits on people. But I agree with you. I think this is definitely a move in the right direction. It would have been nice, to see more discussion of that kind of nuance, right? Like, okay, well, what is the standard for imminent and those sort of things? But instead, we get, oh, this is going to allow people to drive through protesters, right? That's kind of what the debate has boiled down to, quote unquote. That's the narrative.
Well, right. And a lot of what you're saying will be debated by lawyers, right? Where acting with a common intent. Well, lawyers will say they don't have a common intent. This just happened. It wasn't intended for that to happen. It just did. So it's not a riot because there's no common intent. But then other people will argue, the prosecution will argue, well, we're not saying it has to be... crap. I can't remember the word.
Premeditated.
Premeditated is the word. Thank you. It doesn't say it has to be premeditated. If they're all doing it together, that's a common intent, right? So then you're going to have to prove that your individual client did not have the same intent. They just happened to be there and people happened to get hurt and happened to have damaged property. So I think what you're talking about will all happen in the courts. But yeah, it's disappointing that in the common culture, we're not having this discussion. Because this law, I want to be clear, is not saying you can't have an assembly of three or more persons. It's you can't have an assembly of three or more persons who are doing certain things. Now, what's the case against this, William? That could the American Revolution have been illegal under this law, under this bill? Well, yes, but isn't technically all war illegal in that sense, right? All war is saying the legal system isn't working, so fuck it, we're just going to rebel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's not saying something like the possession of weapons or like establish the intent, right? It's not saying something like that. It's saying like the imminent damage to property, right? It's not you holding a baseball bat and marching. It's you swinging the baseball bat towards the window.
Right. And honestly, they probably would only prosecute it once actual damage happens, right?
Because yeah, it's definitely easier to prove in that case.
What?
Oh, it's definitely easier to prove in that case. You can just, here's his baseball bat and here's the window they smashed.
Well, this goes back to the whole hate crime thing where, you know, the argument is you can't prosecute intent, right? You can't say this person hated this person. That's why they committed the crime. It's just, well, they murdered this person and murder is wrong. It doesn't matter what the motive is. Well, that's the same thing. If there's a group of people carrying weapons and they're not doing anything, you can't prove intent. You can't bring that into a court of law and say, well, we arrested these 50 people because we think they intended to hurt anyone. Well, what's your evidence? Carrying a weapon isn't intent to hurt. That can be beyond a shadow of a doubt, that can be self-defense. So I think the only way you can have intent is if they actually do it. So I think I really like the way that legally this was written. And I really think this is important for further sustaining the peace of Florida. Because notice how Florida didn't have a lot of riots to begin with, which I think DeSantis rightfully attributed to not being locked down as long. Because if you remember, one of the things I said on this show was, something crazy is going to happen because you can't lock everyone inside for a long amount of time and not expect there to be some sort of backlash against that.
And I would even take it a step further. I think the lockdowns radicalized people.
Well, yeah, that was something else deeper, we talked about as well.
They went deeper into the Twitter cesspool, right?
Right.
The blue check mark.
Well, we talked about that. Do you remember talking about that where we said that it used to be the public square where you had these conversations was you went outside your house. Well, now we're locking everyone inside their houses, and the only people they can talk to is the people who share their views, and then it just becomes an echo chamber and deepens. We talked about that, remember?
Yep.
And not only that, part of when we talked about that, we said that they're being fed misinformation on purpose from all sides, because now they're a captive audience. You have nowhere else to go. It used to be you read the news and then you went out and talked with other people and you reasoned it out and you said, well, that doesn't make sense. That's the New York Times telling us that. Do we agree with it? Now you're inside. You're just being broadcast at all the time. So that'll actually be an interesting study for years to come.
Yeah.
No one's talking about that repercussion, right? We're talking about mental health and everything. But what about information and the beliefs people have who are locked down more? Are they more disconnected from reality the longer they were locked down?
Yeah, I think that's probably true.
Well, and speaking of that, I mean, the last thing I wanted to talk about this week is adjacent to all of this, right? So we had the George Floyd verdict, right? The cop, Chauvin, however you say it, was convicted. I think probably rightfully, right? I mean, laying on that guy's neck for that long, I can't see any rational defense for that.
I think maybe the top charge was not necessary, but certainly the reckless disregard one. Now, I'm no lawyer, but it didn't seem like he was trying purposely to kill the person, right? So.
Well, again, that goes back to intent, right?
Yeah.
Does it matter if he was trying intentionally to kill him? He died.
For the distinction between the charges, and it does. So I think he has, you know, I think there's two consequences that are going to come from this trial, just in this case, before we move on to the wider issue. The first one is, I think they overcharged him with that top charge, and I can't remember the name of the top charge. And then to be clear, the Minnesota laws are different than Michigan laws and California laws that I'm a little more familiar with. And then the other issue is, because they didn't sequester the jury, I almost guarantee this is going to be retried, because you had all these politicians basically polluting the jury the entire time. And in fact, you have one juror already coming out and saying that, yeah, they just didn't want to riot, so they voted guilty. Well, that's enough for a mistrial right there.
Yeah, and two things about what you just said. I think anytime you're including intent, you know, beyond like premeditated, right? When you're saying premeditated, that's different. If you said that, if you could prove that this guy said, I'm going to, you know, the next black person I arrest, yeah, I'm going to kneel on his neck to kill him. That's premeditated. That's different from the intent I'm talking about. I think anytime you're saying like, oh, this person did this because he was hateful, that was his intent, I think that's an overcharge. So I agree with what you're saying there.
Yeah.
And that's, you're right, that's a terrible precedent to set if we start adding this stuff on, right? Well, what it is this person's in a position of power. He did something he should not have done, and that resulted in someone's death. Now, we can argue whether he wanted to kill the person or not, but when we start getting into intent of, you know, racial bias and things like that, that creates a non-objective justice system.
Exactly.
And then the second thing is, that is the whole juror thing, like, we voted guilty because we didn't want a riot. That creates a much deeper cultural problem. Because regardless of if you're polluted by politics in the sense that politicians are speaking to you, you don't exist in the year 2021 if you don't know that there are consequences to your verdicts in the culture, especially such a large case. So how can any case like this ever be tried objectively? You could argue just by that statement that we've killed the concept of objective justice because it's now social pressure because of that.
Yeah. I mean, it's mob rule.
Right. This guy was dragged out and convicted guilty because of mob rule, because of everything they did. Now, am I trying to defend the guy? No. But I'm trying to say we can't do that in the legal system. I mean, look at what's happened with mob rule, with sexual assaults on college campuses.
Yeah.
How many...
I think Garagos has been making a lot of good points around this. He's a defense attorney, and he's usually... and also someone who very often sues the cops. And he's been disgusted by the procedures here in this trial. And he says it up front. He's like, I am not a defender of cops, right? Like, this is not about that. This is about, if you set this precedent that this kind of jury tampering and this kind of, prosecutorial behavior is allowed, well, yeah, it's good, quote unquote, good now, because you feel like you're putting a guilty person away, right? And you're putting them away for a long time. Great, hooray. Except for when the shoe is on the other foot, and now you have an innocent person being persecuted by the powerful system. And then you'll realize, wait, these procedures, this kind of jury tampering, this kind of, you know, politicians and protests having effect on the jury because they're not sequestered, that's dangerous.
Right. When you're taking it, what you're talking about, William, is you're talking about short term versus long term. And I think one of the biggest problems in our country, and maybe it's with human beings, I don't know. I would have to think about this and, you know, compare it across history. But it's people thinking short term when they need to be thinking long term. I agree with Garagos. I am no defender of the police, especially when we look at, you know, we've said historically on this show that there are IQ caps for hiring police officers. We see that a lot of them just like to be petty power mongers, right? We've talked about the militarization of the police. There's a lot of problems with the police across the country. So I'm no defender of the police. And in the short term, mob rule addresses that problem. However, the problem is when you apply these principles outside of the police and you bring it to like a private citizen. And that's why I was using the example of sexual assaults on college campuses. You again have to assume, and this is what's being done, and part of the problem is you have to assume social justice premises of there being a rape culture. And then again, you go, oh, well, these short term principles are worthwhile. But what ends up happening is then all you have is people constantly saying the system is flawed. And then they keep using these short term principles, and people, which the system is supposed to be about individuals in America, people become martyrs or scapegoats or symbols of the system being fixed rather than the individuals that they are. And that's the thing we have to remember, that even if there are problems on a large scale, even if Chauvin, however you say his name, is an example of the problem with policing in America, to be properly just in the long term, he needs to be treated as an individual. Because the only way you fix these long-term problems is not by going about it in a collective manner. You fix them by treating everyone as an individual and get people in there who have good values and make good choices, rather than saying, oh, we're going to make all of these rules that everyone has to follow. That doesn't work. There will be people who just don't follow the rules. It's about people's psychology and philosophy being fixed and getting rid of or avoiding the people with major personality flaws or personalities that don't fit specific professions. But instead, we're applying these short-term fixes that are only going to worsen these issues, because it's taking things away from individuals and making it about groups, making it about the system.
We would also be remiss if we didn't also talk about how we're asking folks for marginal pay to go into dangerous situations where they are not trained to deal with this kind of mental illness, which is this kind of drug abuse, right? And it is not easy to deal with these wide open situations in a safe manner. Again, not defending
Chauvin.
William,
that speaks, right, but that speaks exactly.
I'm talking about the system part that right. We have to take responsibility for, right? Chauvin
right,
has to take responsibility for the death. We have to take responsibility for the fact that we're asking people to do things that are very, very hard, and not training them how to keep themselves safe and to get that situation into something that can be under control. They don't have the tools to do it.
Right. What you're talking about, William, is you're looking at it from the perspective of they're just creating a rule and saying, well, if we make this rule, that'll fix it. Without looking at, as you're saying, how is it affecting the individual and what's the individual's perspective in these situations? And this past week, the controversy that was raised over a shooting is a perfect example of it. These police officers are being put in no-win situations. So a cop this week shot, I believe it was a 16-year-old black girl, killed her. And then it came out in the video, in the body cam footage, that she had a knife and was supposed to stab another woman, right? Stab another girl, whoever it was, right? I don't know all the details of it. I don't know why the person was going to stab the other person. I don't know everything. All I know is this. People
They literally, the video, you can tell, they literally pulled up. They're like, hey guys, like get down. Something's going down, right? Like they're trying to assess the situation. In the middle of them assessing the situation, this woman, like they say, they keep saying 16-year-old, but they when they walk up the situation, they see a woman wielding a knife, starting to swing it towards another woman. So what do you do?
Well, right. That's the context. And this is where I want to reinforce, emphasize something you said. No win situation. It's like you just said, she looked like a woman, but now they're saying 16-year-old girl. He doesn't have that knowledge. He has no way of assessing that. He goes into that situation, and there is no choice he is going to make that from a systemic point of view is going to be proper. He shoots the girl. She dies. The other girl doesn't get stabbed. He doesn't shoot the girl. The other girl gets stabbed. He shoots the gun in the air. The bullet comes down and hits someone. They get injured or die. He tases. It works. Well, he tased the girl. That was violent. He tases. It missed. The girl still gets stabbed. There is literally nothing he can do that has a positive outcome. And we're judging him based upon that. And not only that, we're taking it the extra level of corruption and saying his intent was racist.
So it's racist to stop a black girl from stabbing another black girl. Okay.
I don't even know, like, if you're racist in that situation, isn't the most racist thing you can do just to drive away? Like, I don't understand how getting involved is racist. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Oh, unless dude, saying, I mean, I don't know how close you've been following this story, but the media narrative is that, knife play is common among children.
That's like the media narrative?
Yes. Like we're London or something, where, if you guys aren't aware, like the number one way to die if you are a black, I think it's the Caribbean, not the Nigerian, sort of like immigrant groups, is knife crime. you know, they're banning knives in London.
After they banned guns, right?
Well, yeah.
Right.
It's just, there's a whole lot of stabbing going on.
Yeah, and wait until they start stab banning fists because punching people hurts people. Well, that's a different discussion. I mean, that's an interesting way they're approaching it. That's an interesting way they're approaching it. I think because what I'm pointing out would be the angle they would have to go, which is absolutely ridiculous. You would have to argue that he was so racist that he just wanted to shoot a black person, wouldn't you, in order to claim it's racist?
Yeah. It's just, well, thank God I ran into this situation.
Yeah, this is awesome. There's two black people fighting. I get to shoot one.
Like, oh, I'm getting that drop.
As I was thinking about saying that, I was like, somebody's going to take that out of context and I'm going to get canceled. Like 100%. But I mean, context matters, right? And that's the point. Like, I think the most racist thing he could have done was drive away, right? Like, I don't care what happens to them. Fuck them, right? But the fact that he got involved, like, shows that he cared and he was trying to fix a situation.
Well, not show that he cared. It's his job to get involved in this case, right? I don't know. I forgot what state this was in, but I know I'm familiar with Maryland. They're obligated when they see, harm for life, right? Like they're obligated to take some sort of action, right? And that's the whole reason that the police exist is in for that moment.
Right. What's the point of even having the police if they can't intercede? You just let things happen and then look backwards and say, well, who did the wrong thing? Right. You could argue that as well. I was presupposing that he cared. That's why he had his job, that he cared to protect people. But you're right. He meant just have it because he's good
at
it.
Further intent. Yeah.
Yeah. You're right. You're right. My bad.
Look at the behavior.
My bad. I apologize. That was a mistake. But you get the point I'm making, right? Okay, yeah. So do
Why
we have
do you
any?
Always ask me that right when I take a sip of the coffee.
Because I know psychically.
You can hear somehow in my beautiful microphone that little noise.
Do we have
the coffee.
Any other thoughts on all of this issue?
No. I'm tired of us only caring about the race of the person who gets shot and just and not focusing on the actual. When we put this in the sort of like Steven Pinker Enlightenment Now sort of context, we're trying to figure out a way. If I put a more positive spin on this, we're trying to figure out a way to police better and in a less violent fashion. I think that is good. We've made progress over. Think of the constables in the 1700s versus today, right? Think of the sheriffs in the Old West versus today, right? We've made a lot of progress over historical timescales with that. But that's not the narrative we're putting it in. We're putting it in this weird social justice like kaleidoscope, and we're missing the point of who, we'll talk until we're blue in the face about how, African Americans are 10 times or a billion times more likely to have encounters with police. Well, sure, that's if you slice it that way, but let's slice it by let's find the actual pattern and look at it's poor people, right? We all know poor people get hassled by police, right? Who gets pulled over for having broken taillights? It's not rich people with Lamborghinis. It's not people who work at Google. Those people
certainly
get speeding tickets, right?
Certainly. And there are certainly from the other perspective, we're not looking at, again, from an individual perspective, what people can do to improve their own lives to have fewer encounters with the police. Are there tendencies that poor people have that tend to put them into poverty and tend to also put them in the line of the police as well? We don't talk about these things because we're told that's victim blaming. Even what I just said would be called victim blaming, and that's part of the issue as well. We're not having these long-term discussion about individuals. It's all short-term outrage about tragedy.
Yeah, I'm going to make up an ism just to illustrate the point. Rather than blaming all this on racism, I'm going to say that somehow the police secretly know which families don't have fathers, and they have a distinct hatred for the sons of people who don't have fathers. In other words, maybe bastard-phobic? Bastardism?
Bastardism is better.
Okay, there we go.
But so they
that's
are bastard.
That's my new thing. And so now I want you all to go through and see if you can find all these people that are being, you know, shot by the police. That if it's not a higher correlation, that is not a higher correlation than the color of their skin.
Bastard phobia leads to bastardism, though.
Oh, okay. There you go.
Not the same thing as bastardizing, though.
Yeah.
Although, if you kill the father and then kill the son, is that bastardizing?
I don't know. I feel like we have a script for a horror film coming up.
Yeah. And when we're talking about movies, why don't we just talk about movies? So let's do it, William. Hit the music for the next segment. As always, if you would like to continue the conversation with us during the week, you can do so by joining our Discord channel. We had another week of great conversation. I learned some things. One of the things I'm going to talk about in relation to one of the trailers, that wouldn't have happened if people didn't join the Discord. So join our Discord. You can do so by going to themidside.com or themidside.com/podcast. Click on any episode link and then clicking on the join Discord link inside the episode post. This week, I want to review the new Mortal Kombat movie. Full disclosure, I was not able to see it in theaters. I watched it in two parts. I watched it in two parts on the same day via HBO Max. I'm not sure if my experience would have been different. I might have paid attention to it more, but it also might have been a blessing in disguise that I didn't pay attention to it as much. When I say pay attention to it, I don't really go on my phone in theaters, but I go on my phone if I'm watching something at home and it doesn't hold my interest. Before I go into more specifics about this movie, I just want to recount the rating scale here for bromanticism. We have just no bro, bro, which is like the middle of the road ranking. Then we have bromantic, where that's a movie that's bromantic. It has bromanticism in it. Is it the highest form of bromanticism? No. The highest form of bromanticism is the final ranking. So bromantic. This is reserved for films such as anything made by Christopher Nolan or anything made by Zack Snyder. Not saying all of their movies fit bromanticism and that all of their movies are so bromantic, but that's a pretty good indicator, pretty good barometer right there to give you what I'm thinking about. A so bromantic movie that I'm going to see next week is Scott Pilgrim versus the World. They're re-releasing that in theaters, remastered for Dolby. And I'll be seeing that next week. So that's a good example of a movie that would earn the so bromantic rating.
Nice.
So returning to Mortal Kombat. There were a couple movies made in the 90s. They were decent. There's the Always, William. There's the Always. What's the word? Ominent, always present. Present is the word I'm looking for. Always present concern about can video game movies exist? My concern with a movie like this is what happens when you have a franchise that's about killing people and your favorite character is killed. And what I mean by that is when you use a fatality or any of these moves in the game, William, the character can come back. You can keep fighting, right? You can always restart the game or you can change characters. But you kill a character in these movies, and unless you write an out, which I think they may have done in this movie, but unless you write it out, the character is done for the trilogy. They say they want this to be a trilogy. The writer says they want it to be a trilogy. So I can give a really concrete example. Kano was always my favorite character in the original game and in Mortal Kombat 2. I always played with him. And then in this movie, he was my favorite character. Now they did the stupid villain twist with Kano, right? Oh, he's actually a bad guy. Because we can't have
those. There's walkers in the barn and Laurie's pregnant.
Yeah, whatever. I mean, if you won't care about being spoiled by Mortal Kombat, guess what? A bunch of people die and they show their fatalities and they say things like, finish him, flawless victory, right? That happens.
Oh, come on. They had one of the character only speaking Japanese. Didn't he say, like, what was his
get
line?
Get over here.
Yeah, get over here. There you go. Oh, sorry.
Yeah, that's the only line that Scorpion says in English in the movie. But to be fair, and again, spoilers, but the movie starts with him being killed, and then the end is he comes out of hell. So you could argue his mystical powers gave him the ability to speak English, or he learned English in hell. So, and that was another thing.
Like, hell has a great English as a second language course.
Yeah. The Rosetta Stone is apparently in hell. That's another thing. I always thought Sub-Zero was the good guy and Scorpion was the bad guy because Scorpion came from hell. But for some reason in this movie, they made Sub-Zero the bad guy and Scorpion the good guy. Very confusing for me from a video game standpoint. But maybe that's a marketing thing. I don't know. I lost what I was saying. Oh, yeah, the Kano thing. Going back to Kano.
Yeah.
Kano was a very Sawyer-esque character in this movie. He had a lot of quips. He was funny. He was sarcastic. He was talking down to people. It was very much a character I liked. He was by far, to me, the most entertaining character in the movie. Most of the other characters were bland or they said a lot of expositional dialogue. So I liked Kano the most. But then Sonya, predictably, because you know they have that rivalry in the lore, killed him. And so is there no more Kano? Is the best character, the best acting gone from the franchise for the movies? I don't know. But that's a conceptual problem that whoever handles this franchise would have to deal with. The greater problem with this movie is one that we're probably all very aware of at this point, William. We're all very aware of the WB 2-hour runtime mandate, right? You're very aware of that?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, it seemed like this movie was rushed through. It was like they just kept hitting plot beat until they got to the end. And then you got to the end. And it didn't seem like any of the moments in the movie were earned. And this is a great movie where you can look at it and say, well, what does it mean to earn a moment? A moment is earned when the development is there. So things do not happen in reality without a series of choices being made that have consequences in reality that cause reality or people to change. A good story is earned because it shows those effects and those choices and those changes. Mortal Kombat does not do that. It just jumps to the next thing as in, oh, this is the next thing that happens. And because of it, it just feels like you're watching like, oh, we need to name check these characters and we need to name check and fan service all of these elements in order for this to sell. And that is ultimately the biggest weakness of the movie. It does not have any depth. It does not have thematic depth, right? They had this great thing where you have this marking on you. If you're one of Earth's fighters, you've been chosen for the tournament and you have to go and train in Lord Raiden's, I want to say hideout. I can't think of the word they use. Temple probably is the word they use. In his temple to find your inner power. And once you unlock that inner power, you'll have this superpower, right? So Kano unlocks his anger and he's able to shoot a laser out of his eye, right? And Jax unlocks his power. So his
He unlocks it over a fight for like spring rolls or something.
Well, right. And that's in the original game, but that's what I'm saying, what they were doing with this specific story, right? They were changing it a little bit. And you can do that. You can have different interpretations, right? Just like, yeah, Snyder has a different interpretation of Superman. This is the way they were approaching it. And I liked that. If they had done a martial arts story, you know, sort of like a blood sport or Karate Kid, about finding your inner strength or your inner personality or your inner values leading to finding your superpower, which helps you fight in the tournament, that could have been a really well-done movie. You could have done a two-hour movie just on that. But then you also have to focus on the opening scene of Sub-Zero killing Scorpion in the past. And then you have to focus on the Outworld getting their troops together to try and kill the Earth Realm's fighters before the tournament so they can win their 10th tournament in a row and take over Earthrealm. And then you have to focus on their battle with them in the temple. And then you have to focus on Earthrealm responding. So everything that could have been interesting and could have earned something worthwhile, is glossed over because you're just hitting all these plot points. I mean, think of all the plot points I just said quickly, and all of those could have individually been their own movie.
Yeah.
So ultimately, that's the greatest weakness of this. I think a lot of the conversation around this movie has been exaggerated. There are some people who are saying it's amazing. There are some people who are saying it's terrible. Look, it's neither of those things. If you like the world of Mortal Kombat, if you like the different characters and you want to see them on screen, if you want to see the gore and the brutality, it's all there. I don't think this is something I would rush out to theaters to see, but I also don't think this is something that if you wanted to see it once, it would be like a complete waste of your time. So I'm going to give this movie a solid bro. All right, let's move on to Trailer Takedown. As always, I like to post the trailers in the Discord. So if you want to watch the trailers before the episode, join our Discord, or I post them in on Saturday. If you want to watch them after the episode, they're in there. Or if you want to, you know, alternate, watch a trailer, we talk about it, watch a trailer, we talk about it, you can do so in the Discord.
Trailer Takedown. First trailer.
Takeout Girl is about an young Asian woman who delivers, I don't know what type of food, but it's some sort of Asian food for her family's restaurant in downtown Los Angeles. And she gets involved with also being a drug runner, a drug deliverer, while doing this. If you ever want to know what I mean when I talk about naturalism, if you want to know what naturalism looks like on a very concrete level, watch this trailer. Right? It seems to be about her choice to become this drug mule while being, while delivering food for her family's restaurant. But really, it's about how the system makes it so she has to do this, and this is her only way of getting out. This is a prime example of naturalism. So this trailer itself is a hug if you want to know, hey, what's naturalism? I will always think from now on, people want to know what naturalism is, watch the trailer for Takeout Girl. Even the way it's shot, is trying to do this like hyper-realism to it. As far as the movie itself, it is a hard, hard, hard tackle.
Yeah, I'm glad you pointed that out, Justin, because I was thinking, wow, this is a no-win situation that they've completely contrived, right? Like, there's no way. So she's presented as the system gave me no choice but this, and then there's even a line in there, well, what if I want to stop or something? And it's like, you know, implied, like, well, no, there's no choice. You have to do this, and you can never stop, right? She thinks, you think that this is a way out, but it's not. It's just, yeah. Her choices don't matter. That's really what it comes down to. So, tackle.
Even the seeming setup
trailer.
Hit it.
You go to the demand when you step on it.
Way to step on it, Justin.
To be fair, you stepped on me. You didn't wait to see if I was going to say something first. even the way they show her getting involved with it, right? She goes into that one restaurant or the one place, and they're like, oh, well, yeah, your payment's in the back. And she goes in the back, and they just, you know, they're like, oh, look, it's all these drugs we're sorting and we're packaging, and we want you to run them. It's like it was the choice of the other people for her to be a drug runner, and they forced her into it. As if, like, people who are running these kind of operations would want to jeopardize it by allowing a random delivery girl to see what they're doing in the back.
Yeah.
Second trailer.
Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings is the latest Marvel movie. I don't really know what else to say about this movie besides, like, I'm done with Marvel. Like, so there were elements of this that were clearly in the same style of the genres of, like, Sucker Punch and 300, where, you know, you've got this young boy who's trained from the time he's young to be a martial artist, and then you have sort of the, you know, if you remember the Japanese scene from Sucker Punch with the giant ninjas, right? There's some sort of, you know, of those tropes that was in self commenting on. This is, you know, using those tropes because it's that kind of movie. But they're... The most interesting thing about this is that Awkwafina is in it, and Awkwafina is a talent. Here's the irony of our society right now, William. Awkwafina keeps getting cast in these movies that's like, oh, this is the Asian movie, so we need Awkwafina in it because she's the funny Asian lady. And like, that's kind of racist that I feel bad for her because she's legitimately funny. And like, if you let her be funny, she's funny. But instead, she gets put in these roles that it's like, we need the funny Asian lady. So it's not Margaret Cho anymore. It's Awkwafina. I don't know. It's just, if you want to watch Marvel nowadays, can you please tell me why? So join the Discord. Let me know why you're interested in watching Marvel, because I don't get it. There was nothing substantial and nothing interesting about this trailer. I don't know what I could remember about it to be like, oh yeah, I care about Shang-Chi's conflict. And granted, it's the first trailer. It's just uninteresting to me. Tackle.
Well, in typical fashion, I am appalled by the lack of diversity in this movie.
That's actually the one thing that doesn't offend me. Like, if you're going to go, William, full on, if you're going to go full on with this perspective, do it. Fucking make black movies, make Asian movies, make Hispanic movies, make Native American movies. I just want to see them. So if people are going to commit to this, A+ for that.
Okay. Well, I'm just joking around, obviously. But yeah, I mean, this is made for the Chinese audience, clearly. Apparently it's getting ratioed in China. They don't think the look is correct. They're very skeptical about an American made movie made for them. Maybe that's racist. Maybe it's not, but I don't think this is going to do what they think it's going to do. I mean, coming off of Mulan, you think Disney would have learned their lesson, but it sounds like not. And then as far as we look at it from an American audience perspective, there's probably this is not a very familiar character in the Marvel universe. I mean, I had no idea who this person was. And while it could be interesting, it looks like it's just paint by the numbers, right? At least from this first preview. But I don't know. I mean, I like fighting movies, but I don't know. This looks... I'd rather watch Mortal Kombat than this, at least based on this first preview. So, tackle.
A couple things about what you just said. I don't think it's racist to have the Chinese audience be skeptical of American movies trying to make a Chinese American, you know, Americans trying to make a Chinese movie. Maybe culturalist. I don't know if we're at that point. Yeah. Maybe it's racist because they're saying we're being racist by doing cultural appropriation. But I think that's a valid concern. I mean, I think one of the biggest problems in Hollywood is you have people in LA trying to make movies about Southern culture and they make them all seem racist and like super ignorant rednecks. I think that
same thing with Midwest culture, right? Like they try to, right. Whenever they said something in the Midwest, it's always like, you know, it's like Coach or something, the old sitcom, or like, you know, even in How I Met Your Mother, right? The view of the folks from Minnesota.
Yeah. So I think that's a valid concern. And then I forget what the other thing you said was that I was going to reply to. Just go to the next one.
Third trailer.
Werewolves Within is set in a small town and stars Lily, the AT&T girl. I think that's her name. And I don't remember the name of the cop, but he's pretty funny. I've seen him in some other stuff. And in it, there's a werewolf, and they're trying to figure out who the werewolf is in this town. This looks low budget. It looks sort of like a bottle episode of a TV show. And what I learned in the Discord channel is this is actually based on a video game. So this is a video game movie. That said, it doesn't look bad. It doesn't look great. There's nothing in it that I'm like, I hate this. Just, you know, the fact that they cast the AT&T girl. I mean, good for her that she's getting a chance to not be the AT&T girl. I'm sure she didn't, you know, go into Hollywood wanting to do that, so hopefully this works for her. But it does show that it's low budget. That's who they could afford, right? People might go, oh, I want to watch this because the AT&T girl's in it. So we'll see. This is one that's like, maybe if it's on Netflix or HBO Max or something that I happen to watch one night, but otherwise I'm not going to seek this out to see it unless there's absolutely nothing else in the theater at that time. So we'll give this a Netflix and hug to be nice.
Netflix and hug.
Yeah, this looked super boring to me. I don't know why exactly. I tried to put my finger on it and I really couldn't. I don't know. It wasn't clear if we were going full sort of campy or not, right? and maybe, I don't know. I think the low budget parts of it bumped me out a little bit. I don't know. I couldn't really feel like this was going to be interesting. It's sort of a small town, right? Like small town, like taken over by Warlords, maybe I don't know. It wasn't, it seemed like they could have spent a little bit more money on the trailer. I'll just put it that way. So I'm going to very lightly tackle this.
Tackle. Final trailer.
Annette stars Adam Driver as a man who marries a woman named Anne, and they have a child named Annette. I give that description because I'm really not sure what the plot of this movie is from this trailer, so it doesn't communicate that. But I will say this about this movie. I want to know more about what this is about, and I did read a little bit, and apparently there's possibly a fantasy sci-fi element with when this child is born. So that's possibly intriguing. But I want to see another trailer. I want to see more because it is not often I say this or think this, but the directing in this trailer is gorgeous. The framing of these shots is gorgeous. The cinematography.
Stunning. Yeah.
Yeah. It's visually just stunning trailer. Like I loved watching this trailer from how visually stunning it is. And that is saying something. There's not a lot of people who use the art form in this way. This is not trying to be realistic in this trailer. Now, does that tell me anything about the plot? Does that tell me anything about what can be done well with the plot or done poorly with the plot? No, but I am willing to give this movie a chance. And it even made me want to go back and look at this director's previous work because of how beautiful this was. I am willing to give this a chance. Even if nothing else was given to me, based upon how beautiful this is, I would see this movie in theaters just to give this a chance to see what happens. Now, I could be sorely disappointed at the plotting and the writing of this, and that would be very disappointing, but I'm willing to give it a chance. So I am going to give this a tentative hug based on its visual beauty.
Hug.
Yeah, you hit the nail right on the head. Even the music. I like the way the music and the visuals went together in this trailer. But much like you said, no idea what's going on. No idea what the conflict is really. So if there's one thing that would, you kind of want to tease a bit of that out before you commit to a movie. Like, what's the stakes? What are we talking about? What's some hint at the theme or the plot? Or at least the inciting incident. Maybe there'll be a follow-on trailer. I hope there will be. But yeah, this seems like something that, I'd kick back and watch on a Thursday night. So, I'm going to hug this.
Hug!
The plot description from what I read seems like the birth is the inciting incident. So, I don't know. Hopefully there's another trailer. If not, we'll
spoiler,
check this out.
It's an alien!
I mean, that would be interesting. It could be done well, right?
Yeah.
I don't think it'll be something that outlandish. I think it may be sort of like a at least if I was writing it, I would give the child a power akin to the butterfly effect with Ashton Kutcher.
Okay.
Where the kid's born with something that can alter reality or something of that nature, some sort of supernatural mental ability. But I don't know, we'll see. That's just speculation on my part. Anyway, let's round out this episode. What did we learn this trip, William?
I learned that 420 should not be a national holiday, and I have since closed my change.org petition. Justin, what did you learn this trip?
I learned that it's very important to focus on in our discussions going forward the short-term versus long-term thinking. And distinguishing between the two and when it's important to do short-term thinking and when it's important to do long-term thinking. Because I think a lot of our problems are because we're very short-term with our thinking. Even our definitions of narcissism and selfishness and self-interest are all short-term. Yeah, I mean, if you have short-term self-interest all the time, yeah, it's fucking destructive and terrible. But that's not the way the world works, and that's not the way life works. So I think we need to really focus on short-term versus long-term as we go forward on this show. As always has become sort of a catchphrase on this show, but still, I want to thank you for listening like you always do. Appreciate it. Otherwise, this would just be me ranting into a microphone, especially if William was not here. Thanks to our Liberty.me listeners. Hopefully you took what we said seriously today. You didn't take us as being annoying and moralizing. And I know somebody who's, you know, there's got to be somebody who's a libertarian who's going to listen and be like, ah, typical, they're taking a conservative stance, blah, blah, blah. I hope we distinguished ourselves enough that you understood what we were saying about marijuana and 420 and the way to approach the rhetoric of it. If you want to support us, you can do so a number of ways. TheMidSide.com/store has a few t-shirts on there. I need to get to updating the designs, but it's tough because I got a lot going on with teaching certification and things like that. You can also buy my book, The Cut. You can find it on Amazon if you go to, you know, search for my name and The Cut, Justin Lesneski, The Cut. You can also go to TheMidSide.com/The Cut, or you can support us on Patreon or Locals. As always, any and all support is appreciated, including affirmations. If you go to the Patreon, themidside.com/Patreon or themidside.com/locals, you can support us per episode or per month. It helps us keep the lights on. And as always, William, what's the best way you can support the show?
Tell a friend.
Tell a friend. Get your friends listening so we can keep this conversation going, and then get everyone in Discord so we can talk some more. Because it's getting really tiring trying to talk on Twitter or other social media platforms. Let's create our own insular community. I don't want to use the word insular. That's gonna piss people off.
Join the tribe. Conform.
Join the tribe. Rah, rah, rah. But you know what I mean. This concludes your journey into the Midside. I'm Justin M. Lesneski reminding you that if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
I'll lead an effective strategy to mobilize true and international effort to pressure.
The Expanse, Season 1, Episode 1. I watched it yesterday. Justin, you're next. Let's go.
Yeah, I'll get to it this week now that my parents are leaving tomorrow, or when you're listening to this today. So I'll be able to find some time to listen to it this week. And William, I think we should try and do a discussion that's simulcast on YouTube through StreamYard. I think we should try and do that as well so we can get a chat going.
Sounds good.